Well, it's 2020, and it's the first time I'm on since the new year, because I've had a fairly... January's always a fairly busy month for me, because I'm a teacher this month. I'm a high school teacher this month at Science and Math Academy. It's fun. Nice. Or Institute, not Academy. Academy's Illinois. I make that mistake every time.
Sam doesn't have the same ring.
No. Although, so Sam works at Sammy. never make that joke again. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. So, it is the new year, and it is, again, an election year. And we well remember the madness that is 2016. But the Democratic primary process is a lot more, there's a lot more horses on the field this time. I don't want to call them horses, do I? There's a lot more contestants on the field this time. It's an actual game, I think.
True. You have your, you know, basic run-of-the-line centrist like Biden, although he's even going right for a centrist. You have your, you know, far-leftist Bernie. You have your I'm-a-crazy-person Marianne Williams. We have all the fun stuff.
It's a buffet of political crazy. But like clockwork, now everybody's like, oh, it's the fault of the Biden, or it's the fault of the Bernie Sanders people that Trump won 2016. We can't let that happen again. Blue no matter who. Blue no matter who. Every time like clockwork. And you know what? That's fine. I'm okay with that. But while you're, what I'm noticing with a lot of these articles that are coming on right now is that it's always a compulsion to push other people to have them change their behavior. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. What I'm going to ask you today is, when you're sharing those articles on the internet, that you take a reflection about what you could change to be more inclusive, to bring these people to the table in 2020, because that was also a problem in 2016, is that there were a lot of people who would vote for Bernie and nobody else. And then nobody on the other side was saying, hey, maybe we need to start thinking about the good ideas, you know, the actual back and forth negotiation process that is supposed to happen at the American political table. I'm encouraging everyone to participate in that in 2020. And this is the first and the last thing I'm going to say about it. Questions, comments, concerns?
I'm kind of a blue no matter who, just because it's just like, you know, it's not to say I do not have opinions between someone like Biden and someone like Warren and someone like Bernie. I have my personal candidate that I would prefer.
Right.
The fact is, no matter who it is, it's not Trump, and I will vote for them.
Yeah, and that's
where I'm at.
That's,
so it's like,
awesome.
And I'm perfectly willing to have the conversation. I tend to challenge people. It's like, when you start attacking personally, maybe start pulling back
right
on that.
Right.
That doesn't help anybody.
That doesn't help anybody. I get that you don't like this person for this reason. Believe me, I do not like Biden. I really do not like Biden. I think Biden is turning hard right to try and capture the conservative vote that doesn't like Trump. He sees sort of an empty space in the political arena that he's attacking. He's trying to grab those. And it's a completely cynical move, and it's completely politically motivated. But the fact is, having him in the White House is so much better than having Trump. And so if he does win the nomination, I will hold my nose and vote for him. Meanwhile, arguing why he's wrong about this and he's wrong about that and everything, but keeping it on what the issues are.
At this point, I'm kind of like, I would rather have a moldy piece of bread to be president than the one I have now. So whoever...
I've decided that on the air and with most of my friends, I'm going to keep, I mean, anybody who knows me can probably figure out in rough strokes where I'm at politically. I don't hide it, but I don't think going on and on about one thing or the other is going to be effective for me in 2020. And one of the things that I've been paying attention to is just how badly the process failed us in 2016, where it led to the madness. And part of it is, there's the things, you've got a lot of political talking heads, but everybody's saying, here's how you should change your behavior. Change your behavior. Mm-hmm. Change your behavior now. Change your behavior. And I'm like, okay.
What about yours?
Can you change your behavior? Can you stop shouting at me? That would be good. Let's reflect, you know, let's take a look at the process of the way political negotiation used to occur in times past. Where the part of where in my case, where with my politics, I would say, all right, I'm willing to work with you. What are you willing? What platforms are you willing to fight for and bring on board in order to move the country forward? Like, and the answer is usually, I don't have to. You have to come to me. And like, okay, I might vote for you anyway, but there's a lot of people who are not gonna. And you can yell at them all you like. They're still not going to vote for you because when that door closes, and they're by themselves, nobody's looking at them. There's no social feedback. There's no social contract in the voting booth. We have to convince people. This is what marketing is for. Let's use it.
I half agree.
I know.
And that's the thing. It's like, here's an idea. Let me toss this out just for everyone, just kind of a mental stance to take, because one of the things that's really messing us up now in general is the fact that a lot of the hyperbolic shouting and yelling is not actually coming from people who are politically interested or trying to address this nation, but coming from Russian troll farms and other such sources.
I must respectfully tell you are factually incorrect there. I watch a lot of news television, and there's a lot of shouting.
Yeah,
there may be. Well, I'm not saying there isn't shouting, but yeah. I'm saying a lot of the disinformation, a lot of the yelling on the internet, a lot of the memes of like this person is awful because of this comes from Russian troll farm. So,
but wouldn't a little bit of introspection there help you avoid that kind of vitriol?
What I'm saying is like when you see something that hits you on an emotional level, when you're trying to have a political conversation, an intellectual, a let's have a reasonable thought, and somebody comes with something that just like hits you in that place that makes you angry,
yeah,
assume it's a troll and move on.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Or do what I do and assume it's a troll and play troll baseball. You know, absolutely. This is a time where we're tactical approach is good, but once again, don't assume that your tactics are the only valuable tactics. There's a million ways to, you know, the Democrats used to be a Big Ten party. The Republicans still are a Big Ten party. Everybody else is everybody else. And negotiation, the purpose of politics and the purpose of democracy really is about negotiation. And I encourage people to really think about that as we try to get rid of this illegal dude. Out of the White House. Dave.
Hi.
You're here.
Hello.
Sports.
Sports. There's a foosball that we're not allowed to talk about going on now.
There's a foosball?
Foosball.
Foosball. Like,
yeah. Foosball's the devil.
The devil, yeah.
Really? I missed this.
Football.
Oh, football. Yeah. Right, okay. Football. American football. Okay, yes, I don't like American football.
I love how you're so far on the fringes of the sports world that there's a foosball league? How have I not heard about this?
How did I miss it? Look, there's like several kickball leagues in town.
I saw actual on ESPN. What is it that, you know, when you have the board with a hole in it and you're throwing a beanbag through it? Like competitive...
Cornhole?
Cornhole. Yeah, not kidding. Competitive cornhole. I saw this on TV.
The name... Yeah.
Wait, hang on. Competitive cornhole. All right, yeah. All right, I like that. Let's go with that. No, I don't know what's a sport and what's not a sport these days. And so when you say foosball, I go, oh, wait, is foosball a thing? That could be amazing. So football's over both here and in Chicago. So like even what little interest I had in it is now basically negative.
Although there is XFL coming up in a month.
Yeah, I know.
I expect it to be ended in a month, too.
Yeah.
Not because the season's over. But
I'm really going to enjoy watching that crater.
We have Seattle Dragons.
Yeah, we have our own league, right?
Yeah, we have our team.
Our own team.
Yep, the Seattle Dragons. If you want to know what their logo looks like, think Trogdor.
Nice. Is it really Trogdor?
It looks a lot like it.
Yes.
Are they going to be burninating?
If they don't start, I'm going to be real upset about that.
This is the Pacific Northwest. The last thing we need anyone, with all the wildfires we've been having over the last few years, the last thing we need is anybody burninating anything around here. Let's not do that, I guess. So there's a couple things that are worth talking about. That's totally Trogdor. Yeah.
This is a good radio, but I'm showing a picture of the Seattle Dragons logo.
And I don't want to give the XFL any more credit than it deserves, so I'm not putting it in the show notes.
Just go look it up and
GIS it. Yeah, just
it needs
it.
A bicep and it'll be good to go.
Yeah. In fact, like if you look up comparison Seattle Dragon, someone put the bicep on it and it's like, "Oh my god, it's just Trogdor."
Well, I'm actually shocked that the Astros aren't having their 2017 World Series title stripped from them because of the cheating scandal.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been hearing about this?
Yeah, but it's been 100 years since we stripped a title for cheating. Like, yeah. They're hardly the only ones in the past 100 years who have cheated their way to a title.
I feel like there's a political entree here between, and then I was surprised that Cora went from the Red Sox, that they've took it that far.
Yep.
I was figuring Red Sox being Red Sox, one of the most hateful teams in America, but they were just going to say, whatever, hang on to it.
Can we talk about my bitterness about the Astros?
Yes, you can.
Because the cheating aside, they're still a very good team. Mm. Like, it's like
they didn't need to do that.
Yeah, it's like the Patriots. They're that good. They don't actually have to cheat.
Yeah.
And it makes me real mad because the Astros were a joke for how many years in the
My entire childhood.
Yeah.
Almost entirely.
And then they switch to the AL, move into the same division of the Mariners, and suddenly they're the most dominating team in baseball for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
No, it's not.
Can they be terrible again, please? Please.
Well, I was like, yes, let's strip the World Series title from them. I hate cheating. Let's deserve it. Who gets the World Series title if they don't get it? The Dodgers? No. Let them keep it. It's fine. It's fine where it is, just as long as everybody gets fired. But I mean, honestly, just having the cheating acknowledged with how nerdy a sport baseball is, which is why I'm a fan, with all the math and all the talking and all that stuff. No, but anytime anybody mentions 2017 and the statistics for 2017, it's going to be a big red asterisk.
Yeah,
it's going to be the end of it. Speaking of stars. What are with the stars? So baseball's like, we're a very technical sport, but it's all very low key because we're all like 90 years old.
Right.
You're
more than most.
Yeah. But then I walk into, I'm trying to get into soccer. You know, I'm actually considering season tickets.
Nice.
This year because I'm really enjoying it. But boy, if I get something wrong in association football, I'm shot into the sun.
Yeah.
And so now there's like this big debate about how to properly add military stars to the Sounders uniform, and I'm terrified of it.
Yeah, and there is a history here. Not all leagues will do this. I wish more, like, I like it, but the idea is when you win a championship, you get a star above the crest.
Uh-huh.
So if you see a team that has four stars above their crest, that means in their history they've won four championships, which is kind of a cool little way of doing it.
Yeah.
Problem is, the longer the league goes, the more teams amass them, and suddenly somebody's covered in stars, and it's not that great, so you got to find ways to combine them.
Right.
I think the general...
Don't they actually do that with football helmets, like somebody like 80,000 stars?
I never understood how the college helmet sticker thing works. I never did college football, so...
Yeah.
But...
Sports.
Luke...
Over my head.
Welcome.
Yeah.
We do this every time I'm here, mostly because Sam still gets hate mail. When he stops getting hate mail, we might skip the sports.
This
segment.
Is a tradition for me. It is. This is my joke on the entire atheism community. Is what this is.
But so the question is, how do you arrange the stars? Is it like a formatted thing? Is it something that's like standardized or what? For a while, they did something called the Scudetto, which is Italian for little shield.
Okay.
And it's literally on one side of your jersey, you have your team patch. On the other side, you'd get a little picture of the cup that you wore on your jersey for the year to say, hey, we're the reigning champs.
Okay.
And then after that year, they'd put a star above your crest. They decided to move away from the Scudetto. I don't know why. I actually kind of like the Scudetto, but now they have a gold star for the year you've won. And so if you see a jersey with two stars on it, one's gold, one's silver, it means they've won one in the past and then they won last year. That's what the Sounders will have next year.
Okay.
The problem is the design they have is the gold star on top of the other one. So it's two differently sized and colored stars above the crest and it looks stupid. Like once you have two and then you get that third, like two with a third one in the middle in between, that makes sense.
Right.
Once you get, you know, when you have more, it makes more sense, but having the two... just one above the other looks dumb.
See, so. I want you to experience the the existential dread. And, like, social ostracism is a real cost of getting this wrong.
I'm just thinking, so. you have to have your first jersey, then you have to buy a new one when they win, then you have to buy a new one the year after they win, and then they have to buy a new one for the year after that.
Yeah.
Well, this is not like in baseball. The Cubs have been wearing the same jersey for 20 years. And they may change it up 5 years from now, just like slightly change, maybe change the size of the Cubs logo, maybe he had some pinstripes. But in general, it's the same jersey
year
after year. In soccer, the average jersey lasts two seasons before they kick it out and design a new one.
Oh.
And so, and each year there's three different jerseys that you use. So they'll stagger them out. So
the home jersey, the away jersey, and the dress jersey for formal occasions.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Third kit.
That's a thing, really, isn't it?
Actually, the third kit is always fun because the one they go real wild in. Carol has one that's called Super Cyan, C-Y-A-N. Look it up because, my God, the colors in these. I remember the first time they wore it. It's kind of a bright, sort of like pastel blue with an highlighter green collar. And the first time they walked on the field, the announcer just kind of almost dropped an S-bomb on the air. It's like, holy crap, Sounders, what are those? It was kind of amazing to see.
Well, speaking of costumes, we're going to go to the break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about America's newest military organization. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's our voicemail number, toll-free nationwide. And I'm going to start off with an email. Well, actually, a voicemail, an actual recording. And this comes to us from Shujin from the Holy Crap podcast. And I also wanted to thank him on the air because last week or 2 weeks ago, I did a little thing at the beginning of the show talking about my friend Morgan who passed away. And when I found out he had died, I kind of needed to be somewhere public or somewhere. I work alone all week. You know, I work here. Becky goes to school. And so I needed to be somewhere public. And so I went to the Swiss down the street and I was saying, hey, if anybody wants to come by, I kind of need to be around people right now. And he actually sent me a drink from where he was on the other side of the country.
Wow,
he called the bar and had them send me around, which was really nice, and I really appreciate it. But that's not why we're talking to him today. This is what he had to say.
Sam, Shujin again, listening to Velociraptor Trebuchet. Now I've got it in my head of what it would be like to carpet drop a bunch of Velociraptors with, you know, parachutes, carpet bomb them out the back end of a C-5 Guppy. Or Hercules, or whatever the hell it is, the point is, and I would love the idea of seeing what would happen if there was a misfire, shall we say, where something got loose, just to get it, just throw that out here, and have a good laugh. Bye.
So, he's asking me about whether or not, like, having velociraptors as, I guess, like, shock troops out of the back of a Hercules or a Guppy, which are transport planes.
Well, first of all, the Hercules was a spruce goose. There was only one of those and only flew once.
Oh, I thought there was another
one. They have a cargo plane.
Because he mentioned C-5. That's a Galaxy. We're getting so pedantic on this. Like, yeah. Start nailing on military cargo.
No, are you kidding? Velociraptors being kicked out the back of a spruce goose sounds like the greatest thing I have ever heard. I would totally watch that. But I ask you, what branch of the military might be in charge with airdropping or perhaps orbital insertion of Velociraptors onto the world
with
stage?
Orbital insertions.
Yeah.
It has to be the Space Force.
The Space Force.
Space Force.
Actually, do you know the episode of Futurama where they talk about the Space Pope? But it's the Space Pope. I keep every time somebody says Space Force in my head, I go, the Space Force.
The Space Force brought to you by Madden.
Ouch. A Bible donated by a private museum run by Hobby Lobby President Steve Green was blessed by clergy at Washington's National Cathedral last week. In a now deleted tweet, the cathedral stated the Bible will be used to swear in all commanders of America's newest military branch. U.S. Air Force Chief Chaplain Stephen Chiak stood in full dress uniform as two pastors each gave benedictions for the U.S. Space Force, the president, and the country. While an Air Force spokesperson verified that the Bible would be used to swear in General John J. Raymond Jingleheimer as chief of space operations. There is no official religious or other sacred text, nor is there any requirement for a member to use any sacred or religious text during swearing-in ceremonies. An Air Force press secretary further clarified that being sworn in with or without any text or scripture will remain a personal choice for each individual swearing in. Honestly, I don't think a Bible is the right choice for literature. I think it needs to be like the Timothy Zahn Star Wars novels.
Ooh,
is what
Thrawn?
You swear in. Yeah. Everybody seems to like those.
Yeah.
It seems kind of biblical. I've never read them.
Well, here's the thing. This is a very fascistic type government. Why don't we have Starship Troopers by Robert A. Heinlein?
Ah.
That is the best idea.
Or how about just a copy of the movie?
There you go.
I mean, because if we're going to full crazy, let's dress up the good guys in SS uniforms. That won't scare anybody off.
Can we just make Paul Verhoeven director of operations of Space Force?
Hey, where do I apply?
Flight operations and plot lines for the U.S. Space Force.
Here's the thing about my thought on when I hear about like this weird Bible and praise, you know, having people swear it and everything. Do you remember a number of years ago we had a story on the show about the Islamic Council of something or other put out an opinion on if a Muslim goes to the moon, or not to the moon, to Mars,
yeah,
which direction they would have to bow to Mecca to,
yeah,
and how that would work. And I love how when you take a religion that was thought up and sort of like distilled through Bronze Age peasants and try to bring it to a modern age, the further you make it out from the Middle East, the less sense it makes.
Yeah.
And they still will fight and fight to hold on no matter how little, like, no matter how much time they have to spend figuring out which direction on Mars you have to bow to say that's towards Mecca.
Right.
And I feel like this, you know, the proper Bible to swear in for Space Force is kind of the same level of absurdity.
Oh, yeah. And, well, it is the same level of absurdity, but I have to admit, I find the debate over which way you have to face and whether or not you need some sort of, you know, 6-point degrees of freedom rig to properly. Right. I always found that fascinating. Like, even before I got on this religious topic.
Does it vary depending on time of year?
Well, I mean, apparently, yeah. I think the answer was aimed towards Earth.
Okay.
They'll have to have, like, an app that'll, like, point them in vague.
They already
direction.
Have that app that tells them when to pray, so it's just, pray now, pray in this direction.
And, yeah, there's an arrow pointing, you know, up and to the left.
I suggested putting a station that would beam prayers from, like, a station-to-station system between planets.
Okay.
So you pray towards the local exchange.
Right.
And then the local exange puts it on the interplanetary network and routes the calls to Mecca. That was my solution. For some reason, I don't think they're going to accept it. There's something about it.
Are you saying the Islamic Council of whatever doesn't listen to Ask an Atheist
advice
for doctrinal issues?
No, I'm not. Yeah. They're not a big fan of my concept of Islamic jurisprudence for some reason. But now this is technically now not a Bible. It's a space Bible.
Has it been to space?
I don't know.
No.
I don't think so. This is more likely to be a Bible stolen by somebody, given where it came
yes.
from.
Yes, this is true. This
yeah.
is what Hobby Lobby does.
Yeah, yeah. Is their thievery of religious artifacts. So this could have been a Bible somewhere in Europe that had some sort of historical importance, and then somebody wanted to pay $20 for it, and now the Space Force has it.
Now, because particularly when you consider how much of the space, our space industry comes from the Deep South, I have to imagine there have been Bibles brought into space by somebody.
Oh, that's definitely happened.
Yeah, Buzz Aldrin famously brought one into space.
Okay,
yeah.
So, but here's the thing that you need to know. A little fact I heard about space travel that just really puts into perspective. It costs $10,000 per pound to put something in space.
Mm-hmm.
Bible weighs, what, 3 pounds?
The one that Buzz Aldrin brought was miniaturized, so it was less than a pound.
It was less
so
than
like,
a pound.
Like yeah. a mini Gideon-style Bible?
Yeah.
But that's really hard to swear in on.
Yeah.
Midian.
Midian.
Midichlorian? No.
Oh, no.
We're not we're not going there.
It is a space Bible. It is a space Bible. That makes sense.
But yeah, just imagine like If I were in charge of marketing for Space Force, because you need to market your military branch nowadays, because yeah. that's the world we live in, I would think you would have to have a Bible that was in space if you're going to have the, like, and, you know, credit to them, it's not an official, you don't have to swear on this, but yeah. they could have a, for people who want to swear in the Bible, we have this one that's been into space.
That would make sense, yeah.
Would literally cost tens of thousands of dollars to do that.
Right. I don't know. SpaceX would probably do it for $20 and a Snickers.
Yeah, probably.
That's true.
So this is one of those things where you would probably expect me to scream a lot about why does the Space Force have an official Bible? And I'm like, maybe they shouldn't have like an official Bible, maybe a traditional Bible. But given that the Space Force, for good or for ill, and I actually think mostly for ill, big surprise, is a member of the U.S. Armed Forces, and armed forces, you know, deployed armed forces have religious freedom because they're still American citizens.
Right.
You expect to have, and you know, their life is basically entirely modulated by the government. You're going to expect to have some religious things happening inside the military, and that's okay. What's not okay is enforced participation in church services like you see on some bases. What's not okay is the lack of inclusion of humanist chaplains, which
right.
my own representative voted against. Kilmer, I'm not a fan of that guy. And for a number of reasons. But,
right.
You know, so this is one of those things where it's like, all right, you need to make a big... they're going to have a big ceremony because it's the space Bible, right? Eventually it'll go into space. They think. But does it, you know, are we entrenching, does this further entrench like the concept of the United States as a Christian theocratic nation?
It's been entrenched there for a really long time.
But it adds to the odor.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's anything that's like, I would not expect any sort of challenge in the Supreme Court on this to go anywhere.
It's no different than it always has been, which is unfortunate.
Right.
If there weren't much more egregious issues worth fighting, then maybe this one would be worth taking a stand on. But this is such a minor one. It's like, we got bigger fish to fry. Yeah.
And I think it's acceptable for, you know, well, is there going to be a similar ceremony for a traditional, for the official Torah of the Space Force?
Right.
Is there going to be a similar ceremony for the official Quran of the Space Force?
Right. Probably not.
Yeah. Is there going to be an official swearing in of the Space Shuttle Technical Manual, which when I was in fourth grade was my Bible?
Nice.
Yeah. But no, that sort of thing. So if you thought stars on the Sounders logo was confusing, the U.S. Space Force used Twitter to unveil the nameplates and service that Space Force service members will wear. Space Force members will wear a full-color American flag on the left arm and a blue name tag affixed to camouflage battle uniforms used by the Air Force and Army soldiers. The military branch clarified that space operators will serve on the ground on Earth, working alongside other military service members, hence the use of the standard camo uniform. They also cited in savings in taxpayer dollars, in addition to establishing uniformity amongst military members.
So we won't be able to tell them apart from any other service member out there at all.
Or a tree.
Or a tree. Yeah. I mean, okay, are we going to do like a lot of carboniferous asteroid work? Then maybe this works because there's going to be brown stuff on that. But yeah. You know, think about...
not a thing. But
not a thing. True. Carbonaceous is the word I'm looking
for.
There
we go.
Carboniferous.
Carboniferous
is like a type of tree, isn't it?
Like coal.
Got it.
Carbonated?
Carbonated. A carbonated asteroid.
Yeah. Fizzy.
Yeah. Turn our entire oceans into ginger ale. So everybody's said, for cost savings, we're going to use the same camouflage as, you know what else would save some money?
Not having
a Space Force. We like the Air Force was on this. Like,
yeah, they had it pretty well.
This is literally just this is the president doing what the president does, putting his name in big gold letters on stuff. He wants to have he doesn't want to have like a lasting impact, like making the country better or improving things or you know solving a healthcare problem or solving a financial problem or making lives better for Americans. He wants his name on something big and believe me, beautiful.
See, and it's funny because in my head, when I think about what the future of Space Force is, let's say it actually takes off.
Yeah.
pun fully intended. Thank you.
Oh, God. Where's my mute button?
let's say it actually becomes a valued and important part of our military conglomerate, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and it actually does serve an important, you know, science, or NASA does the science stuff, and then you move all the military based stuff to Space Force, so NASA doesn't have to worry about that, which means you don't have as much, like, you know, security clearances. Like, I could see ways this could work out. I could see 50 years from now, Space Force is an established thing, and it's one of those weird trivia things, kind of like, did you know the APA was started under Nixon?
Yeah.
Huh, that seems weird. Hey, did you know Space Force was started under Trump? Huh. I wouldn't think of an idiot like that would have done this. Huh. Yeah. That's interesting.
I like that point. That's a solid point.
So I do have a serious worry with this. So say we use the Space Force, and then is NASA still important? Or are we going to keep using NASA?
NASA has always, like, for the last several years, NASA's kind of doing the thing that I always thought it would be, like, good at doing, which is, like, I mean, it's a research organization, right, but it's also now trying to be like the FAA of space,
which is good.
Yeah, which we're going to need, because now, you know, because we're moving to more of a commercial, you know, commercially based launch systems and stuff like that. And NASA is the one sort of arbitrating how that's done, right, and getting the contracts filled, because like there's a lot of parallels between what NASA is doing right now and what the predecessor to the FAA was doing, like, in the 30s.
Yep.
So NASA definitely has a point.
Okay, like, they did the SpaceX test this morning.
Right.
And
exactly.
It met NASA requirements spectacularly.
Did it?
Yes.
Okay.
Which you're definitely going to need. It almost might be too late for the amount of regulation you're going to need in Space Force. If you want to read up about a terrifying situation, go look up the Cascade, the satellite Cascade.
Oh, the
concept.
Yeah, the Kistler. Is it Kistler?
Something like that.
Yeah,
and it is a terrifying situation, and it will cause so many problems when it inevitably happens. And this is the type of thing we need NASA for, to make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen in the future.
Kessler syndrome is what it is. If there's so much space junk surrounding the atmosphere in the satellite orbits, that, you know, something gets hit by a micrometeorite that creates space junk. That space junk hits other space junk. That space junk hits other space junk. And eventually you just have this fine mist of micrometeorites right in the orbital paths, which means you have
traveling around at 17,000 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Traveling at such speeds and at such vectors that it's basically impossible to put up any satellites or to put people in space. And it basically would, without management, could close space off to us for hundreds of years. And so that is the kind of thing that, like, NASA and the ESA and the Japanese, I forget what they are.
They're working on some sort of solutions to gathering up some of that junk.
My favorite's the laser.
Lasers are fun.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting subject, and that's something that we're going to have to deal with. I mean, there was a recent Russian weather satellite that was a big deal, because it was a weather satellite that put out information that anybody could download. And I was actually going to download it. I was actually going to use it this year for camp, because it gave much better pictures. But it got struck by a micrometeorite right in the RCS tanks, degraded its orbit by about a kilometer, and, well, I mean, ran out of RCS fuel because it got hit in the tank, and it lost attitudinal control and stuff like that, and they're not sure they're going to be able to bring it back.
That's lame.
So there's aspects of this that are going on right now.
Right.
And that could be terrifying, and that's something that both NASA and the Space Force could definitely do something about. It's, you know, space is vast. The bit of space that we're hanging out in is not
getting real crowded.
It's getting super crowded, and needs some sort of management, just like any environment.
Which is crazy, because we're 70 years removed from the very first thing ever being put in orbit.
Yeah.
And we're at the point where it's like, we need to get rid of some of this stuff.
Well, it's not like, you know, the rust. It's not like winter comes and things rust. They just stay until they burn, until they fall into the orbit, like Mir did. I also, one of the things we didn't talk about is, is everything Space Force related? Is this, are we going full on 1950s sci-fi and putting space on front of anything, in front of everything? Like, they're not members of the Space Force. They're space operators.
Space
operators. It's like, what
space
the
operators.
Yeah, space uniforms and their space Bible and their space everything. Now, do you think I'm making fun of that? No, please do that and wear and like on your Earth uniforms with your camouflage that you're using to save money. If you could wear fishbowl helmets with antennas, like I'll give you all of my tax money, all of the tax money to Space Force. Just wear the fishbowl helmets, please. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. I was worried that we hadn't been talking about Space Force on this show, and then we just did 20 whole minutes on it. We did a whole segment on it. And going to the break, we come back and talk about laptops and hamburgers, I think. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-Skeptic, 844-753-7842. I know going from the metal version to the polka version is a bit of a shock. I can see what it's doing today. So it's time to talk about space laptops. No,
space laptop. Yeah,
just a little funny thing that's been going on this week. I accidentally set my laptop on fire last week. And,
you have problems that nobody else ever has. Yeah. I just want to be clear on that.
I've still never managed to set my laptop on fire.
Well, I was trying to fix it, and I fixed it inadequately, and it made the bad smell, and some smoke came out. And so that laptop is gone. But I traditionally name my laptop after what befell the former laptop. And so I thought for a little bit of a fun thing, I would name the names of my former laptops and see if you guys could figure out what befell them. How about that?
That's a lot of laptops that you have on this list.
Oh no, the big list is the list of what to name this one.
Oh, okay. I'm just like, how many laptops do you go through in the average year?
Mean time between failures for Sam's laptop is about 2.1 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I did the math recently.
Just so you know, before you get into that, Carol, my wife, we bought her a new laptop recently because we realized her laptop, the MacBook that her dad bought for her when she went to college 15 years ago. Was still being used.
That's some longevity.
It was so out of date that she pulled up Netflix and Netflix said, no.
So Pixel.
Pretty much, yeah, it was.
No, so Pixel is my first laptop.
Oh, Pixel.
What do you think happened to Pixel?
Screen failure.
Got it.
Yeah.
These get more and more weird as time goes on. Magic smoke.
Well, I mean,
that's got to be something burned out, but you never found out exactly what.
So downstairs, I have this. I have an old Lucent Wi-Fi card from like the 802.11b era, like turn of the century, and it has a paperclip welded to it. And the reason that the paperclip is welded to it is I was working with this power supply on a prototype device for wireless, for like the wireless kind of stuff that I did. And I didn't have a switch for the main power switch, so I just jammed two paper clips onto the alligator clips and electrical taped them up.
Okay, I've done this before.
In Chicago, during a heat wave, in a building with no air conditioning or any air treatment whatsoever, with 99% humidity.
That sounds terrible.
It was, it was horrible, but the humidity had gotten into the electrical tape and it started to unravel a little bit, and to the point where the paperclip was free, and I put my laptop next to my prototype and put 110 right into the logic board. Smoke everywhere.
Oh, the current.
Yeah, and that I don't think I don't think that startup ever recovered from that mistake. So, base jump.
You dropped that one.
It got caught in somebody's skirt. Fell over. Yeah. Fugue.
Someone treated the keyboard like they were playing a Bach organ piece.
It stopped making noise, or it stopped being a computer. It kind of forgot what it was and just started making weird noises.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Cascade.
Hard drive failure?
Nope.
Nope.
a series of capacitors of the motherboard giving out until the whole thing went wrong?
Actually, everybody else's laptops broke. And so I just started handing down my old machines, and it was just this cascade of hardware shifts. Fire Blight.
Similar to this one?
Yeah, no.
No?
Fire Blight is the name of a disease that affects apples.
Okay.
Did you spill cider on it?
No, I got sick of apples.
Oh, okay. Got it.
That was my first computer after being done with Macs. Strain.
That's when you realize how much you actually preferred Macs?
No, that was the DC connector broke, common failure.
That's a
cord strain.
Common.
Yeah. And we'll move on to it. So that's the thing. So I asked, what should I name this laptop? And I got the Shocker. Clever, but no. I am not naming my laptop Shocker. Sparky, Genie, Zappa, The Smoky Aftertaste, Amperage, Current, High Ohm, Toasty, Cuckoo's Nest, which I don't understand, Thor, which I do understand, Raiden, Faraday, Bug Zapper, Zappy the Lappy, Bazork Stank, Overcurrent, Tesla, Smellificent, Sticky McZap, and Electrofumes.
Let me throw Backdraft onto there.
Backdraft. Okay, I like that. That's good. So if you have any ideas of what I should name my new laptop, and remember, it's the What Befell the Past laptop that the current laptop is named for, I'd like to hear it. You can give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC, or you can email us at questions@atheist.radio. So, conservative parenting group 1 Million Moms, which is an inaccurate name, is decrying ads released by Burger King for their use of what the group calls the D word. In one commercial, a man tasting the plant-based Impossible Whopper remarks, "Demand, that's good." I don't know if they mean, well, okay, whatever. and another ad, a taste tester who is surprised to learn that his patty contains no meat, exclaims, "I'm a damned fool." 1 Million Moms, a division of the American Family Association, which has been classified as an anti-gay hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, called the ads irresponsible, tasteless, and extremely destructive and damaging to impressionable children viewing the commercial. The American Family Association, writing from 1938, pick a different year. 1928, that's a better year. I'm not trying to make a World War II association.
Oh, I was actually
from the past.
I thought 38 was literally the year that Gone with the Wind came out, which was the last time it was controversial that somebody used the word damn.
Oh, I was almost clever.
accidental cleverness is my favorite cleverness.
To be clear, I want to throw, you know, a joke from, this is an old joke, but 1 Million Moms is kind of like Holy Roman Empire. It wasn't holy, it wasn't Roman, and it wasn't
an empire. Yeah. Yeah, it's basically that. It's a group of people, I think it's run by a guy. working
it's
for
people.
Yeah.
Is working, it Brian Fisher?
No, it's not Brian Fisher. Brian Fisher is too legit for the AFA.
No, he was the AFA spokesman. Like,
yeah, not, he was.
He was?
He's not in there anymore.
Oh, okay.
Which is why he doesn't have that Bob Odenkirk set anymore. it's not 1 million of them. It's a couple thousand.
Yeah.
And they're not moms. Well, some of them I assume might be, but it's run by pastors, not moms. So, but yeah, I saw this article and I'm like, oh, what D word did they use? Like, what? I'm boggled, like thinking for like, I'm like 10 minutes, or like, I don't want to click and find out. I want to, like, what? In American parlance,
right.
When you can't use a word, you say, you know, the letter in the word, like the F word or something like that, and everybody knows what you're talking about, or the S word, and then you got a couple, you might. D word, I'm like, half of the words that are curses that start with, like, what?
More importantly, you know, you're having this sort of crazy thought process yourself. Imagine the person who works in the HR department at Burger King who got this letter and has to go to the marketing department and says, "What did you do? What did you say?" Because all my letter says something off. What word is this?
Why would you put this in a commercial? And I click. I literally have no idea. I thought a few things up. None of which I can really say on the air in this context,
right,
because we wouldn't be using them in a medical way. But then I clicked on the word, and I find out it's the word damn, which I don't have to bleep out on the air. I can say damn as much as I like. Damn it. And that was just, wait, are we back to this? Like, well, again?
They're still there.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I never left.
Going back to the Gone with the Wind comment, I feel like a really good marketing department would respond to this with just a tweet that's a gif of Clark Gable saying, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And call it good.
And given that this is a fast food a Twitter account, which is like apparently the front line in America for being another D word on the internet.
When did that become a thing? Like, Wendy started it, and rather than getting blowback, suddenly everyone decided to follow along.
Yeah.
They are kind of funny.
Some of them can be funny, but
they are legitimately amusing, but why is it specifically fast food American burger joints being jerks at each other? like what why is that the thing? Why isn't it banks? Like, that would be fun.
Bank of America versus Chase.
Yeah, versus one of my favorites, Fifth Third Bank. And it's all, you know, and they started slinging S word at each other. I'd be totally into that. But why is it fast food? I mean, just get our minds off of what they're selling. I don't know what it is. Anybody have this Impossible Whopper in?
Carol had one, and not the Whopper, but there's a restaurant in town called Harmon that we went to. They serve an Impossible Burger.
Oh, Harmon's going.
Yeah, they offer it as a substitution.
They're all over the place. No, they're actually pretty tasty.
I haven't tried them yet.
Her thought was like, it tastes fine, but it doesn't have that fulfilling sense that she gets. Like, there's just, like, when you're done eating a burger, there's a feeling you have.
There's no blood.
Yeah.
They have blood substitute.
Oh, they have blood substitute?
Yeah. They have heme. Some sort of artificial heme.
Fair enough.
But, yeah, like, the texture's right, the taste isn't bad, but she's like, it just, I finished it and I didn't feel like I just ate a burger. So.
All right.
And I'd rather eat a black bean burger, so they're just fine for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good enough. A Massachusetts palm reader is facing charges of larceny, intimidation of a witness, and multiple counts of obtaining property over $250 by trick after a client reported her to the police. Tracy Milanovich is alleged to have advised a client that her 10-year-old daughter was dead in God's eyes, had something inside of her that was bad, and that the client would need to purchase her daughter's soul back after Milanovich had removed an alleged demon and transferred it into a Barbie doll. Milanovich also advised her client that spirits would know if she told anyone about the scheme. Altogether, Milanovich scammed her victim out of more than $70,000 and various household items.
Isn't this just a regular day at Sunday school? You know, regular church?
What do you mean?
Scamming the victims out of tons of money?
Oh, 100%. Fair. Yeah, I could see that. But I don't know. Like, when I hire a plumber or an electrician or something like that, and they come to my house, they fix it, they don't point at my TV and go, that. Like, they want, like, you know, they don't raid my house
That's
for
true.
Things. You know what I mean? They don't ransack my house looking for valuable items in lieu of pay. I get a bill. And I'm like, shouldn't that be a big clue? Give me all your stuff. But then again, your daughter's demon soul is in a Barbie doll, which I think is the plot of Skyrim? Or is that Demon Souls? I don't know. I haven't played.
It's definitely not Skyrim.
Okay.
Annabelle the movie? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, this is a movie plot, isn't it?
But, and here's the thing. I actually know where I'm getting this, stealing this idea from. This is from the Scathing Atheist guys, but they've kind of mentioned, to be clear, when you go to a palm reader and you pay $5 and they look at your palm, that's not how they make their money. You're not going to make a living spending $5 for every person who wanders in. What they're doing is looking for marks.
Right? Yeah.
They're literally looking for the person who's gullible enough that they can suck in for these cons. They are con men. This is what they do. They are con artists.
Yeah, I see you have an ancient curse upon your family. Let me cure this for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just what it is. I mean, what we laugh at it, but after, you got to say, like, this is not a thing. You're what does dead, like, not only is dead in God's eyes not a thing to in a reality sense, it's also not really a thing to in most religious senses either. I mean, I don't know. It after a while, other than what you have said, don't do this, don't get scammed, all you can really do is joke about it, which is where I'm kind of at mentally now. And yeah, it makes doing this job right here hard sometimes.
Yeah. It's like, how many times can you hear? We've heard over the course of this show, we've been doing the show for 10 years now.
Yeah.
We probably heard 20 or 30 actual stories of con artist, psychic, or, you know, tarot reader, or whatever, sucks 20 grand, 100 grand, 2.5 million out of a single person.
Well, and that's how we got on the map in the first place, was all that Harold Camping stuff.
Right.
Which was brought to my attention recently because somebody at school said, I'm supposed to ask you about Harold Camping. And I'm like, I can talk about this? And they're like, if they ask you specifically, you can fill them in. I had told them about my trials and travails of dealing with Harold Camping and the end of the world. And
countdown to backpedal. Countdown such to good marketing.
Yeah.
God, such
Mike,
a good one.
Mike was inspired. I have never seen him like that. And what made it really worthwhile was getting all the hate mail. And I haven't gotten any hate mail in a while.
Yeah.
But I was excited because I got one. And this is this is Jeff from Indiana, who writes, "Your show sucks! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Think you're funny, but you're awful if being an atheist means you have to an idiot no thank you."
To be clear, your is the wrong form.
It's the right.
Both times.
Well, fortunately, and partial credit, it's the same your on both. He doesn't use both wrong ones. You know what I mean? There's some points for consistency, loss of points for wrong use.
You're also short one exclamation point.
Yeah.
No, there's another one.
Yeah, you said four. There were five, plus the one at the end.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that's five. Okay.
I guess I get the gist of this, but that last bit of the sentence isn't exactly clear.
But having to an idiot is one of my favorite parts of this job.
Having to an idiot?
Yeah. It's the thing that keeps me going, is having to an idiot. I don't know what I would do if I couldn't turn on this microphone every Sunday morning, fire up the recorder, and having to an idiot at people.
Not to mention, can we be clear? I attacked for the your, but there's also a split infinitive here. It's either N2 idiot or 2 idiot N, but it's never
split
2.
Split infinitives are not a thing! They are not a thing! You prescriptivist knob!
I feel like we're giving this email all of the seriousness it deserves.
Yeah. We're giving it everything we need. I can't tell you how much I love emails like these. They really do keep me going. And then Brian from San Diego writes, "Love the show. New to the show. Love it. It's informative."
Welcome, Brian.
Thanks.
Hi.
Well, you didn't say anything about having to an idiot. Where were you when I needed to have to an idiot?
Brian, all seriousness, I need you to write back. I need your opinion on split infinitives.
Yes, tell us of the split infinitives.
Oh, no.
I think they actually booted the split infinitive section out of the OED a few years ago.
I had one teacher who marked on a paper that's like, this is a split infinitive. And I'm like, it was years before I could recognize one.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know what that meant.
I had several teachers that were
still
picking
couldn't
them.
Identify okay, one
let,
for you.
Let me give you the ultimate
canonical
example.
Yeah.
Everyone knows to boldly go where no man has gone before. You don't put anything between to go. To go is the infinitive.
Right.
Splitting is putting a word. So it's boldly to go or to go boldly, but never to boldly go.
The concept that to go, it actually constitutes a single word because it constitutes a
right,
single concept.
Right.
Because it came from Latin where it was a single word.
Where it was a single word. So so because, you know, we in English follow laws from Latin to the letter, that's why we have so many rules about declension. So we're not allowed to put anything between to and go because it's one word.
Yeah, I was a literature major, not a grammar major, so we just do whatever we want. If it makes sense, good to go.
I was it was a painful thing to me.
And I will argue that Star Trek single-handedly destroyed the split infinitive rule.
So Star Trek invented cell phones, invented the iPad, got people started with transporter technology, and destroyed the split infinitive rule.
Yep.
I'm sure there's more, but that's a good list.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of things.
That's a serious quality effect on the world for a...
For a
speculative science fiction
TV show starring a Canadian whose previous work was a movie in Esperanto. Yeah. A horror movie in Esperanto, now, in fact.
Wait. His episode of The Twilight Zone came before Star Trek, and that is worth watching.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're right.
Yep, that's a good one.
I'm just looking for an opportunity to mention
a movie
that
in Esperanto.
He did a horror movie in Esperanto.
Is this readily available on the internet?
It's somewhere on the internet. You may have to get it from one of your streaming services of choice. So
one of my favorite little facts about him is if you watch the original or the motion picture, the first of the Star Trek movies, there is a character who's like... supposed to be his son or maybe just another, you know, lieutenant type who's sort of like this new second command that came from nowhere. Literally the character was written in because they expected to have to fire William Shatner and needed somebody to take over.
Really?
And that's why that character was there. They got to the end of the movie like, oh, we didn't need to fire Shatner. I guess we can send him off with V'ger now.
Well, they should have fired him because then, you know, Star Trek versus God.
The greatest film ever.
What?
No, it's awful.
Okay.
It's terrible.
I don't know. Sometimes you're serious about these things, and I'm not really certain where you're going
to
go.
Because of that movie, I got to have Wrath of Khan, which was very enjoyable.
Wrath of Khan, it's a cliche, but it's so true. Star Trek movies are every other one's good.
Yeah.
One was bad. Wrath of Khan was great. Search for Spock was meh.
Meh.
Voyage Home was amazing.
That was awesome.
Final Frontier was awful. Undiscovered Country was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, every other movie is good.
I'm a little less sold on Undiscovered Country, and I actually think the first one is okay. I actually think it's better than people give it credit for.
It's just boring. It's just real slow.
Whales in Space is still my favorite.
Everybody loves Whales in Space. Everybody, because it's barely a Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And that's the note we're going on. Ha ha, no dead babies this week. This is Ask an Atheist. Our voicemails, 844-753-7842. Our email is questions@atheist.radio. Our Twitter is AskAnAtheistWA. Please send me your laptop naming suggestions. I'd like to thank my dad, Sam Sr., who's here in the studio with us today. A little microphone shy, which is weird given what he does for a living, but I'll take it, whatever. See you guys next week.